So, happy Mother's Day to everyone who is a mom or a grandmom or who has even served in a motherly role for anybody on this earth. And this is, on this day, set aside to express gratitude for motherly love, we're going to honor a woman who has had a great impact on many of us in this room, the woman called the Mother of Unity, Myrtle Fillmore. We're going to take a brief journey to explore some of those events that shaped Myrtle's life and her character, and also that shaped the evolution of her spiritual thought. She truly was an amazing woman. And we're going to begin with what is for many a very familiar story, although there may be some in the room who have not heard it. This is the story of Myrtle Fillmore's healing.
She's known as Myrtle Fillmore, the co-founder of Unity, along with her husband, Charles Fillmore. But she was born Mary Carolyn Page on August 6, 1845, the seventh of nine children. As a child, she adopted the name Myrtle and would later reject the teachings of her strict religious parents. Ever since she was a little girl, Myrtle had been sick. At a young age, she contracted tuberculosis. For many years, she believed she was incurably weak and sickly.
I had all the ills of mind and body that I could bear. Medicine and doctors ceased to give me relief, and I was in despair.
That was until Myrtle discovered new spiritual ideas and principles we now call unity. The year was 1886, and Myrtle was in her early 40s. She and her husband Charles attended a lecture by metaphysician Dr. E.B. Weeks of Chicago. Myrtle left the talk with a stronger faith and an understanding of her innate, divine potential for healing through affirmative prayer.
It flashed upon me that I might talk to the life in every part of my body and have it do just what I wanted. I began to teach my body and got marvelous results.
Instead of seeing her body as weak, inefficient, and diseased, she began speaking words of strength and power to every part of her body, her liver, stomach, abdomen, limbs, eyes, and heart.
I didn't get discouraged at their being slow to wake up, but kept right on, both silently and aloud, declaring words of truth until they did respond. And neither did I forget to tell them that they were free, unlimited spirit. I told them they were the centers of life and energy, omnipresent.
Myrtle began, regularly affirming,
I am a child of God, and therefore I do not inherit sickness.
By repeating this affirmation, Myrtle believed she was going to get better. And 2 years later, she did. In 1888, she was healed of the tuberculosis condition that had threatened her life. Myrtle remained committed to blessing and encouraging her body with true thoughts and words.
I became very watchful as to what I thought and said. I didn't let any worried or anxious thoughts into my mind. And I stopped speaking gossipy, frivolous, petulant, angry words.
Myrtle was excited by her healing discovery, and so were her family and friends. She began working with others in need of healing. In time, her husband Charles Fillmore began his own practice of prayer and meditation. He began to heal from an ice skating accident he had at age 10. In 1889, inspired by Myrtle's transformation, the Fillmores founded the Unity Movement in Kansas City, Missouri, as a healing ministry based on the power of prayer and the power of thoughts to create reality. In 1890, the couple pioneered a prayer outreach that grew into Silent Unity, the 24-hour, 7-day-a-week prayer ministry that still serves the world today.
I want everybody to know about this beautiful, true law and to use it. It is not a new discovery, but when you use it and get the fruits of health and harmony, it will seem new to you, and you will feel that it is your own discovery.
Myrtle Fillmore made her transition on August 6, 1931, at age 86. Her work lives on through Silent Unity and the inspiring manuscripts and personal papers in the Myrtle Fillmore Collection at the Unity Library and Archives. The collection is being digitized for online access. To learn more or help support this effort, visit unity.org.
So, I think I came from on high during that, I don't know. So in addition to the wealth of information that is in the Unity Archives, and those of us who are going in September will be able to walk through and explore in the archives, I'm hoping. In addition to that, there are many books that have been published about Myrtle, and some of them that I'm going to be using today are The Story of Unity by James Dillon Freeman, Myrtle Fillmore, Mother of Unity by Thomas Witherspoon, and two books by Neil Vail, Torchbearer to Light the Way, The Life of Myrtle Fillmore, and The Unity Movement, Its Evolution and Spiritual Teachings. There are copies of all of these books the copies of all of these books out on the table from our lending library. So if any of you would like to take one home, you can just fill out the little card and take it home and read more about Myrtle. So how many of you knew or remembered that Myrtle was not Mrs. Fillmore's given name? Raise your hand if you knew that. A few of you, okay. Well, as we heard, her given name was Mary Carol Page, but archival stories reveal that Myrtle never liked that name. From the time she was a baby, her father called her Myrtle Lee, and so when she was very young, she adopted, all on her own, the name Myrtle. Even then, she had a mind of her own, did she not? And later in life, she commented, "It just came to me. The name just came to me. I think my soul asserted itself and took its own name rather than the one given to me by my affectionate parents." So Mary Carolyn Page was born on August 6, 1854, and grew up in the small village of Pagetown, Ohio, founded by her father, Marcus Page. Now, in Myrtle's youth, there was no church in the little town, but the Pages, like many others in the church community, would travel to the next town for church when the roads were passable, and when they were not passable, they met in one another's homes. Myrtle's parents, do you remember the slide of her parents? They looked pretty straight and somber, did they not? Okay. They were loving parents, and Marcus and Lucy were deeply religious, faithful Methodists. Myrtle wrote, "My family for generations has been members of the church. They were God-fearing people, so I was carefully raised in a religious atmosphere." And this is from one of her letters. She says, "But I found out that my dear ones did not have an understanding of God that satisfied me. Mother was a very spiritual woman. She always kept the principles of right and love before us as her own example. She accepted the church creed and had such a devotional spirit that she felt that if her God saw fit to punish or do any of the things that were attributed to God, it must be all right. I have marveled that my mother, who loved so devotedly, could have worshiped a God who punished or took the lives of his children." Now, it's not in this particular letter, but Myrtle's father was equally stern, and he believed in a vengeful God, probably more than her mother. He insisted on a puritanical lifestyle for every member of the family. Myrtle, however, never became a member of her parents' church. Isn't that interesting? She never officially joined. When she became of age, she decided not to, and she told her parents, "I don't believe in hell, and I won't belong to a church that teaches it." Pretty courageous, right? I don't know how old she was, but she wasn't too old, still living in the home. Her father insisted that the children attend church, but when they got old enough to decide, he did not force them to join. Myrtle later wrote that she appreciated the services in the Methodist Church, but even as a young age, she couldn't accept all of the doctrine. She never spoke harshly of her parents' religion, ever. Instead, she just affirmed the truth that her soul could accept and quietly denied the rest. Some of us have been there, have we not? And as an adult, she wrote in a letter to a friend, "I know my life must express many of the splendid ideas embodied in the Methodist faith." Myrtle would go on to study world religions, and she and Charles both believed in the necessity of accepting the truth in other faiths. And that's what Unity teaches today. In her youth, Myrtle was passionately in love with God and all of nature. She spent many hours alone along the banks of a little stream behind their house. And she writes, "I delighted in getting out in the garden or walking in the woods. I loved to touch a tree, and I felt it was intelligent. I felt something very satisfying in my close contact with nature. I now know that I was feeling and responding to the omnipresent Spirit of God." So there's one of the teachings that shows up in Myrtle's consciousness very, very, very early. And also at an early age, as we saw in the video, Myrtle was diagnosed with tuberculosis because some of her family members, more than one, had died from the dreaded disease. She was brought up to believe that she inherited the illness and that there was nothing she could do about it. And in fact, she was treated in her family as an invalid. Often she heard family members say, "She's delicate, she's ill, she must not overdo." So with her physical activities curtailed a little bit by her family, Myrtle turned to beloved books and going to school. She loved school. She decided very early that she herself would become a teacher. Again, in her words, "I remember my school days and my eagerness to read and learn what others knew. I always wanted to read the books that were supposed to be for big boys and grown-ups. But little girls were not encouraged to do such reading. So I had to take my brother's books quietly and secretly to a little corner to enjoy them. I particularly liked the old myths, fairy tales, histories, and scientific work." Now, Myrtle wondered for her whole life why it was that her parents considered books unsuited for her, because she said she got from those books just incredible ideas, and they opened her mind, helping her to grasp complexities, many of which show up later in her theology. She raced also through simple mathematics and delved deeply into algebra, geometry, and trigonometry. Science taught in the little one-room schoolhouse failed to hold her interest, so she read her brother's chemistry and physics books, and she became infatuated with astronomy. At a very young age, she could identify every one of the constellations in the night sky. Don't you wonder what her IQ was? She must have been really, really smart. As a teenager, Myrtle read every single book in the pretty large collection of her family library, including works by Shakespeare and Josephus, the historian of the Jewish people, as well as the Bible. Biographer Thomas Witherspoon writes, "Myrtle didn't know it at the time, but her illness, her interest in education, her fascination with science, and her spirituality were all pointing her in the direction of her future love interest, Charles Fillmore." We'll get to that in a minute. Myrtle Fillmore received actually a better than ordinary education for young women of the day. She graduated from high school and was enrolled in Oberlin College, where she took the course, are you ready for this? Literary course for ladies. Does that sound interesting or not? Not. Anyway. Her education lasted only 1 year because women were not eligible to go any farther. 1 year was as much college as they were allowed to take. After graduating, however, she did fulfill her dream of teaching school, and she moved to Clinton, Missouri to do so, and that's about 70 miles southwest of Kansas City. I've got a map a little bit later on the slide. She had great success as a teacher and was absolutely beloved by her students. At about 30 years of age, however, after having taught a while, she became extremely ill with both tuberculosis and malaria, and doctors told her she needed to go to a warmer, drier climate, suggesting Denton, Texas, a resort area for consumptive patients. Now, I realize that does not look like a resort area, does it? However, the year was 1876, so maybe that's what resorts look like in the day. This is really important, however, her move to Denison, because one of the first things she did there was join the Denison Literary Club, where she met, one, Charles Fillmore, who had come south from Minnesota to seek his fortune. Thomas Witherspoon writes that at their very first meeting, and by the way, at their very first meeting, Myrtle read aloud some of her own poetry. Charles was smitten, and he said right then and there he knew he wanted her to be his wife. He always thought he had chosen her until many years later she set him straight. She said, "Charles, the woman always does the choosing. You were splendid, dear, or I would not have chosen you." So, that's a typical quote from Myrtle. At any rate, a short time after they met, the two were exchanging books and ideas, going fossil hunting together, and just building a wonderful relationship. And when Myrtle was finally able to leave Denison because her health had improved to move back to teaching in Clinton, the two began this really long correspondence, of course, in the day by letter. And that's wonderful for us because some of those letters are still in the archives, Myrtle's part. And in one, Charles must have asked Myrtle about her theology, because this is her answer to him printed in The Story of Unity. She writes, there's Clinton, sorry. She writes, "You question my orthodoxy? Well, if I were called upon to write out my creed, it would be rather a strange mixture. I am decidedly eclectic in my theology. Is it not my right to be? Overall is a grand idea of God, full of love and mercy, and dear to my heart is Christ, the perfect man who shared our earthly sorrows, yet lived blameless, and taught lessons such as patience, forgiveness, and tolerance. Affectionately, Myrtle Page." So in the spring of 1881, Charles took a trip back to Clinton, and there, on March 29th, he and Myrtle were married. There's a copy of their marriage license. That very night, they boarded a train for Pueblo, California, Colorado, setting out for a great adventure of life together. They were there for about 3 years, and it was there that their first two sons were born. Then in 1884, they moved with the two young boys to Kansas City, a city in the midst of a building boom, where Charles Fillmore opened a real estate office. Now, Charles' business prospered, but Myrtle's health deteriorated at the same time. Finally, doctors said there was nothing more they could do for her and gave Myrtle only about 6 months to live. It was at this point that she and Charles attended the lecture by E.B. Weeks that we saw in the video, and the rest, as they say, is history. The affirmation that changed Myrtle's life, many of you know it, was, "I am a child of God, and therefore I do not inherit sickness." Let's say, in Mildred's memory, and maybe for some of us at the time, at this moment, or for loved ones, let's say that out loud together. Ready? "I am a child of God, and therefore I do not inherit sickness." This one affirmation just removed from Myrtle's consciousness all that she had been programmed in about being sick and being her sickness being hereditary. So, as we all know, Myrtle's personal prayer and healing experience led to the Silent Unity prayer ministry. In 1893, she became the founder and editor of We Wisdom magazine, a children's magazine. She was ordained at the same time as Charles. They were ordained together. And she served as a minister of then called Unity Society of Practical Christianity. And she was also the director of Silent Unity for many, many years. Now, you know, if you've been in Unity a while, you know we talk a lot about Myrtle's healing for good reason. And yet here's what Myrtle says in later years about her healing work. This is from her own letter she wrote. "At that time," at the time that she went to see E.B. Weeks and started the movement, "at that time healing seemed the most important thing in life to me. I love seeing folks get well and happy. I do yet, but I have learned that spiritual awakening and the daily development of Christ's powers are more important. The soul must be awakened and brought to a realization of the truth and encouraged in the right use of all the God-given faculties and powers." Now here's a reference to what will become later on the 12 powers. The individual must be helped to unify his spirit, soul, and body in harmonious spiritual living here and now. Note the here and now. Myrtle Fillmore continued teaching all her life, sharing spiritual truths, giving lectures, conducting meditations on Sunday morning services in Fillmore Chapel, which we'll see when we go to the village, writing articles. She wrote a children's book, countless handwritten, joy-filled letters in response to people throughout the world who submitted prayer requests. In those days, all of the prayer requests came to Silent Unity by letter in the beginning. These became the source for two books, Myrtle Fillmore's Healing Letters and How to Let God Help You. Copies of How to Let God Help You are out on the table. We do not have any copies of Healing Letters, so if anybody wants those, we'll order them for you. At any rate, her letters and articles were full of wisdom and advice about everyday living. And I think Myrtle Fillmore just exemplifies in so many ways qualities of the divine feminine: caring, sensitivity, love, and faith. It has been written by more than one scholar that even more than Charles, she was the one determined to live from and share practical truth to bolster faith and enrich lives. They both thought, unless you can take your what you learn on Sunday morning in worship and take it out into your world and in your life, it's not as helpful as it could be. So we're going to take some of the principles and truths that Myrtle held so close into prayer and meditation today. But for now, I'd like us to end with Myrtle's affirmation of faith. This is something that she wrote, and it so summarizes her beliefs. Okay, here it is. Ready? Together? Can you see it enough to read it? Can everybody see it? Okay. I do not believe in evil. I believe in good. I do not believe in sin. I believe in truth. I do not believe in want. I believe in abundance. I do not believe in death. I believe in life. I do not believe in ignorance. I believe in intelligence. There are no discords in my being. Being is peace. My faith, understanding, and love are becoming one. What therefore God has joined together, let not man put asunder. That line so frequently used in wedding services, Myrtle saw it a little bit differently. And so we're now going to join together in the one truth about our God that Myrtle Fillmore believed with all of her heart. And for those of you who are here for the first time, this is printed in your bulletin. It is our affirmation that is being said in Unity churches all over the world this morning, that there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life: God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is. Together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life: God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.